Deep Divers, this holiday season, we are so thrilled to be partnering with Bitch Sesh Podcast to raise money for an incredible nonprofit, Baby to Baby. Sadly, one out of three families struggles to buy diapers. Baby to Baby provides basic essentials to children in need across the country. Please, please, please join us in donating to this amazing cause and helping them put necessities and holiday gifts under the tree for these struggling families. No child should have to wake up without a present on Christmas morning, and Baby to Baby buys specific presents for children off their own personal wish lists. You know I've been at a TJ Maxx with one of those wish lists and, ooh, time of my life. Plus, they get them winter coats and snacks and toiletries. Any amount you can give is so appreciated. If you can't donate, please consider donating your time. If you live in the LA area, Casey Wilson and Danielle Schneider will be shopping and wrapping those presents in person with 15 listeners on December 11th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Email bootsontheground@gmail.com. That's B-O-O-T-S. O-N-T-H-E-G-R-O-U-N-D-B, as in boy, S, at gmail.com if you would like to volunteer. Link to donate can be found in our show notes, as well as Casey Wilson's Instagram profile at Casey Rose Wilson. Mine, which is at St. Clair Jessica, and June's, which is at June Diane. Thank you so much for considering donating. I promise you will not regret it.
Hi, I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And I'm June Diane Raphael.
And this is
The Deep Dive.
We're about to do what women have done for centuries. We're crowding around the fire with our generous haunches. We got babies hanging off our tits, and we're going to share with you our fears.
That's right. Our joys.
Our tips on how to stay alive.
Now, Jess, we are heeding a call that no one has made.
Not a soul, but you're invited to listen.
Absolutely, because we make one promise and one promise only. We will not Google a thing.
Because frankly, we're too damn tired.
Please get ready to go on
The Deep Dive.
Deep Divers, it's Jessica here. I'm solo. I'm going solo this week, which you know is and can sometimes be a bumpy technical road. I think the thing is, so like yesterday we were supposed to do this interview and I completely forgot. I was poolside. And then today we're supposed to do this interview and I forgot to tell Cody. So we're doing it though. And I think what I've drilled down on is when June's not here, I think I have a healthy fear of her. And that's what keeps me in line. But my interview subject, thank goodness, is a dear, dear friend. And she is one of my choice grade A moms from New Hampshire that I spoke about that I found last year and fell madly in love with. And what I love about Meredith, besides being a pioneer in the quantum biology medical field, she's also one of those moms that completely forgives any and all insanity / emotional dysregulation / disorganization. And the truth of the matter is, I don't want anybody other than those moms in my tribe, I've decided. If you can't, we are a come as you are type of group in New Hampshire, and we communally mother up there. And so I'm just so excited to introduce Meredith and have you guys fall as madly in love with her as I have. All right. So Meredith Oak, here's what she is. She is the founder of the Quantum Biology Collective, which is a network of pioneers working in the field of circadian health, which you may not have heard of. You're about to hear all about it. The New York Times just called it the medicine of the future. And basically what her website does is teach us how daily habits that we never think about, not food or exercise, are slowly wrecking our bodies and what we can do about it. Meredith started this project during the lockdown. And basically what she did is she interviewed every circadian expert she could possibly find. She is a former media professional and a chronic fatigue patient. And we're going to find out how she got to this field. And she wanted more people to know that our light bulbs and our screens are making us sick and that nature can heal us. Okay, this shit's going to blow your mind. Meredith, welcome to the deep dive.
Jessica, thank you for having me. And before we get into circadian health, I just want to say the forgiveness goes both ways. Because you arrived at my new cottage and to get a tour, dropping the girls off after a sleepover. So it was early and I had not yet walked through the cottage myself. And every single room had a pile of dog diarrhea in it.
That's true. You got an elderly dog that is hanging on.
And I thought, oh, good. That's an added value for Jessica seeing this burlesque for the first time.
But you didn't, but you knew that I didn't judge. Like I literally just, I didn't even see it.
I know. See, and that's the thing about you, Jessica. Like, not only did you not judge, you somehow made it charming that I had dog diarrhea scattered through my house. Like I felt like it was an endearing quality that you liked about me.
It is. And, you know, the more I'm realizing, like, showing somebody your mess, and I think June and I have talked so much about this, so forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but showing somebody your mess is a signal that we are close. And I know you spent 3 years in Paris. And of course, I want to talk about the quantum biology, but I'm also going to talk about Paris. But you spent 3 years in Paris where, from what I've read, the French, it takes longer to become girlfriends, right? They take a little longer to let you in to their personal life and their mess. And I think as Americans, our one gift is that we are like, here's my mental illness, here's my my backstory. And then also, but what I'd also like us to throw off is this Instagram-worthy house bullshit we're doing to each other. Because like, I don't know anybody who's living like that, and it's only making us feel bad. So when you show me your, you know, dog diarrhea, that means to me that we are best friends.
That's how I feel. That's how I feel. And I was like, that's how I know that Jessica and I are close, because she just stepped over 17 piles of poop.
Yeah.
Inside.
And I saw it as a gift.
And it's all good.
And it's a gift. So Meredith, let's take our listeners back just so they know like how we met and where we met. So I think I had talked about it on the deep dive, but our dear friend who was your best friend passed away of breast cancer. This was how many years ago? 3 years ago?
So September 2020.
Okay. And you met her in Paris. She's married to one of my childhood best friends. And so I had heard about you as her best friend in Paris, but I had never met you. And the summer after she passed away, I was on the beach in New Hampshire, and I spot this woman who rolls in a bikini, okay, tanned as the day is long, one of those perfect Meghan Markle fedoras. Okay, and she just like puts out her lawn chair and she's reading a book, which I was like, wow, this is amazing. And I'm staring at her like a total psycho. Could you feel my eyes on you?
A little bit, yeah.
Because I knew, I was like, this girl, she's got some French situations happening here. I'm like, what is her deal? So anyway, it took me like a week or two of staring at you. And then you approached me and said, are you Jessica? And we bonded over the fact that we were both friends with our friend who had passed. And I think within 5 minutes, we were crying and holding each other.
Yeah, maybe three minutes. It was an immediate, oh, there you are.
Yeah, we like melted. Anyway. We like melted into each other's arms. And that was it. Like we skipped over every other nicety and like we're completely just with each other from then on. And Our daughters became best friends. This is the daughter who had her first sleepover with Bibi that I talked about, where they insisted on sleeping in the same single bed and like clinging to each other during the night, which is amazing. But you are a mother of three, and you are so anyway. During that summer, you know, I'm asking about you, and you're telling me your story, and part of your story involves having chronic fatigue after the birth of your third child. And you're telling me how you went about solving it. And it really resonated with me because obviously I've had to do my own digging and research about my own physical, you know, challenges. And so I want you to tell me that story. And then I want us to get into what you did about it because I find it very inspiring. And I have changed my life because of what you've taught me.
I love that. And I love that you're feeling better. It's amazing. And I just want to warn people, you might feel a bit frustrated because you're like, might be like, why the fuck didn't anyone tell me this?
Yeah.
That's how I felt for a while. But yeah, it started with, I think, a feeling that probably all of the deep divers are familiar with, which is fatigue, right? Mm-hmm. Like as moms, like we're just, there's a lot of tiredness, especially in North America, where getting help is not really expected unless you're at work. And then as soon as you come home, the help is meant to leave and you're supposed to take care of everything. I've lived in other cultures where it's very normal for everybody to have some help at home. And it's really different. But anyway,
yeah.
So we all know what it's like to be tired. And then, so I had my first two children. They're about 2.5 years apart. So I had like the baby toddler time and then like the toddler preschooler time. And during that time, like I was tired, but it was like the kind of tired where I didn't get to sleep through the night. I just had too much going on. I took a little break and had my third child when the other two were 5 and 7. And leading up to that and after that pregnancy, I was tired in a whole new way. Like it wasn't like, oh, if I just got enough sleep and had a few quiet days, I would get back, I would be okay. It was like, I would sleep 10 hours a night and wake up feeling exhausted.
Wow.
Like it was like, I would try to exercise because that everyone's like, oh, well, work out. That gives you energy.
Yeah. Work out when you're so fatigued. Like, you know what you should do is actually push your body further. Great. Thanks.
Yes. No, it's the absolute worst thing to do. And I did it. I would do like a really intense fitness class and I would get through and then I would have no energy for like 5 days. Like I literally could barely walk down the hall.
Wow.
And so it wasn't giving me energy. It was like, no matter what I did, it was just like when your iPhone gets old and no matter how much you charge it, the battery just drops.
Yes. That's what you were
feeling. That's how I felt in my body.
That must have been terrifying. Did you feel kind of really scared? Were you like, is something like as much more wrong than just being tired?
Yeah, I was scared. But also because there's not really words for it. The feedback I would get would be like, oh, well, of course you're tired. You have little kids. Or of course you're tired. You know, like people didn't really like, I couldn't find a way to explain that it was no, but it's more than that.
Right.
And so I felt really lonely and lost. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was pretty scared because I'm like, I'm in my 30s. Like, is this it? Like,
right. And people normalize it too. Like, you're a mom, you should be tired. It's like, but why? Why should we feel awful? Why should we be exhausted to the point where, like, when I had my newborn, I like fell down the stairs and then fell asleep at the bottom of the stairs? That was when Bibi was like 10 months old. I just slept there. I was like, I'll sleep until somebody finds me. That's crazy.
Oh my God.
So anyway,
I feel
yes.
you. I feel you.
Okay.
Yes.
So then you're like, fuck this. I got to figure this out.
So went to the doctor, right? But they ran my labs and they're like, your labs are good. You're fine. So it's like, I wasn't sick enough for the traditional medical establishment to have any kind of recourse for me. Like they didn't know what to do with me. Mm-hmm. So I went to the more alternative stuff I did. Acupuncture, and the acupuncturist was actually really good. He's like, there's something really out of balance with you, but I don't know what it is. Mm. So then I did all the food and all the supplements and like all the things where they test every substance that cut your body. And it helped. it definitely took the edge off the symptoms to get my food dialed in and clean up some things that were going on. But I still, like, I still couldn't get through the day without having to lie down on the couch. Like I would have like 5 minute naps and I would just lie down and let my body shut down.
Wow.
For 5 minutes, I could just feel it like, and eat, like, and I had to do that periodically throughout the day. Just like, I just couldn't stand up anymore.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So you're like, this is still not cutting it. And you're still like, I have to search. Yeah. Someone's
and the
help
answer
me
that
somewhere.
Comes back is like, oh, well, your food's not good enough. Like there's, oh, like then that's the thing with food. It's like an infinite abyss, right? Like you can fuck around with your food forever. There's always someone who's like, oh, well, more of this and less of that and none of this and none of that and none of that. And I hate, you know, we have share a similar cognitive profile and I hate details.
Like, I really dislike a detail. I don't
know. Yeah. Like having to micromanage food. And I'm not a big cook either. So it was just like.
No. And after cancer. Yeah. Wait, or during chemo, I went to see a nutritionist. And she was like, she was very harsh. I mean, she was like, just eat all lentils. And I was like, bitch, I can't do this. Like, I'm already struggling. Yeah. And there's a lot of shame that gets put on the person. Like, you've got to cut out everything pleasurable in order to be healthy. And I'm like, well, that's just not sustainable. So it can't just be that. It can't just be that. I mean, sure, that and also what else? Because I can't live... Like, I literally would sit down to a bowl of lentils while I was nauseous. No. No,
oh,
thank you.
Babe.
No, thank you.
No,
MoveOn.org.
That's exactly it. Like, it can't just be that. Because then you're like, oh, I'm having a really bad fatigue day. Is it because I ate a cookie 3 days ago? It's like, no, that's life. You're meant to, we're supposed to enjoy it. And so I was... And this is where I started to get really depressed because everything that I was supposed to be doing to deal with this felt punitive. It felt hard. And like, I'm looking down the barrel. I have, you know, one of my children had digestive issues. So I was trying to do it for her as well. Like it just, it was like, oh, and I just had this moment where I was like, if food was going to work, it would work.
Yeah.
I had just ordered like this thing where you put zucchini in and then it turns it into zucchini spirals because some lady on a keto blog said it would be like spaghetti and my kids would love it.
It ain't nothing like spaghetti. I got that spiralizer. I threw it the fuck out. Don't bring me these spaghetti noodles. They instantly wilt. And now I'm going to have a lot of deep divers sending me recipes and I'll give it a shot. Of course, you know, I'll try everything, but fuck these noodles.
I know, right? I was like,
fuck.
They
these
don't
spiralizers.
Want spaghetti zucchini. They want spaghetti. So I was like, all right, Meredith, you listen to so many podcasts, you read so many random things. Like my whole thing is like, getting underneath the culture and like finding the people who are finding things like before. And I'm like, there must be something. And I flashed to an interview that I had watched in its entirety, like a year before, but then promptly forgot about.
Sure, of course.
And then here I was with my back against the wall facing a life of spiralizers. And I was like, I'm ready. It was like that, like the alcoholic surrender, right? Like I'm ready. I will do
that. That was your rock bottom.
Yeah. And, you know, my higher power, my subconscious, whatever, like flashed me to this interview with this crazy genius who talked about light.
Okay.
And I was like, light. And it turns out that I had some habits that were basically the equivalent of like eating Skittles for dinner.
Okay. Tell me what that means.
That was... reading books off my iPad right before I went to bed.
Okay.
Right. Like being in my bed, it's dark out and I've got a blue lit screen in front of my eyeballs with no mitigation strategy, just my balls absorbing all of the light coming off of that screen and then turning it off and trying to get a good night's sleep.
And why is that bad?
we get to circadian health, which is sort of built on top of quantum biology, which is a whole other avenue to go down. But basically, we have always thought of that we control our health by what we put into our body, what we eat, what we drink, what we take, supplements, medicine, things like that. But it turns out that our body were basically piezoelectric plasma crystals.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That are like absorbing the frequency of everything around us. So what does that mean? It's just scientists have realized that our entire body and our eyeballs have like clocks in them everywhere. And we're continuously reading the frequency of the light around us.
Wow.
And if that light comes from the sun, and it programs our bodies to work properly. And if it comes from man-made products like screens, LED light bulbs, fluorescent light bulbs, it's dysregulating us in every capacity. It's screwing up our digestion. It's screwing up our hormones. It's screwing up, think of a bodily system that we rely on to feel good, and a bad light environment is wrecking it.
And so tell me if this is so simplistic and not at all true, but the way I understood it was, when we go outside and the light hits not just our eyes, but also our skin, when you go out and the sun is rising, that frequency of light tells your body you're up and start making the melatonin that you need to go to sleep, right?
Yes.
So if you don't get out in that early morning light, and you wait until noon to get out, your body doesn't start making that melatonin until much later. And then you don't have enough, right, to then go deeply asleep. That blew my mind. Never knew that. So the most important thing is that you get up. Right when you get up, you go outside. Now, I have the creature feature cookie. So I am forced. And I got to tell you, since we got this puppy, even though this fucking thing is up all the time at night and now it's not as much, I am forced to get up and be outside at 6 a.m., sometimes at 5:45. I'm beautiful. Sleeping better than I'd ever slept before. And I'm tired at night, like tired and ready to go to bed, not like wired at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
So anyway.
That's exactly it. So the cycles of light and darkness tell our bodies what to do. And when we mess with them, it all breaks down. So we go outside in the morning, as you said, it's a signal. It's the AM, early AM frequencies signal to our body. It's time to create, to make that melatonin for us to use later. So the quality of your sleep is determined by everything you do during the day, not just like a bedtime routine. It's like everything.
And also,
but it also tells your body to start using all the daytime things, cortisol and blah, blah, blah. And people have all these cortisol issues and spikes and drops and everything. And it's like, if we allowed the sun to program ourselves, it just gradually rises and gradually drops through the day the way it's supposed to. So it goes down in the evening when it gets dark.
Okay.
And the darkness is a signal, turn off all the daytime stuff and turn on the nighttime stuff.
Right. And the frequency of light that comes from a cell phone, your husband Jason explained this to me, that it is programmed to basically tell your body all the time that it's 12 noon. Be awake and productive and use it more.
It's 12 noon in the middle of the summer, right?
That's like right.
It's 12 noon at the summer solstice if your phone is on factory settings all the time, every time you look at it.
Should we be changing our factory settings?
Yeah.
Okay, to what?
So anything helps, like even just reducing the brightness of the screen, because there's the light frequencies and then there's something called lux, which is the brightness.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to kind of manage both.
Okay, so you want to turn the brightness down all the time on your phone, not just at night.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you want
to you're outside in the sun, and then at that point it doesn't matter because
it doesn't matter.
Pretty close to what's happening anyway.
Okay, and you want to do anything else to your phone during the day?
No, during the day it's fine. It's pretty fine if you have it. Look, if you talk to the purists.
Yeah.
I'm someone who couldn't bring herself to use a spiralizer, so I like to keep things simple.
That's why I'm going to be asking you throughout, like. These women and men listening to the deep dive, we don't have the time to do the research. So I want you to do it for us. So we're just turning down the brightness while we're inside on our phone and on our computer as well.
Yes. So your computer, there's actually some really great software you can get. I have it on my computer right now, and it has a daytime setting that just reduces a lot of the extremeness of the light. And then there's a nighttime setting that like makes it red.
Okay. What's the software called? Do you remember?
So it is called Iris.
Okay. Iris. And we're going to post this in our show notes because everyone's so angry. We keep saying things and then not posting it. So I'm going to blame Cody for that. Cody, that's your fault. Just kidding. Cody's like,
I could send a list.
Okay, great. We're going to copy paste. We're going to post a list and we're going to post a story.
I'll do my little spiel. And the spiel is this. If you would like to live a circadian optimized life, you really don't need to spend a single penny.
Okay.
Just turn off all your lights and don't look at screens once the sun goes down and go outside as much as possible all day long.
Okay, because you always want to have that. You always want to have that communication. So, like, again, not everybody can, you know, go sit outside forever, but you can just go out for a 2-minute walk.
Yes.
And just
so even, if someone works like in a hospital, in an office building, in an underground garage, you know, wherever, it's like whenever you get a break, go outside, right? So have your coffee break outside, have your lunch outside. Any little bit of sunlight will make a difference. It's not like, oh, well, I can't stay outside all day. Forget it. Everything matters. That's part of the beauty of this. Like, you know, an extra 5 minutes, having your car window rolled down, right? Like that's a great way to get.
Wow. Yes, because that was something someone said. Well, I've got windows all through my house and it doesn't work through the window.
Doesn't work through the windows. The window has to be open.
When, you know, it's funny because people are always like, when I go outside in the morning, I feel awake. And I'm like, yeah, because your body is being told to be awake. Whereas if you stay inside till noon, you don't feel awake. You have to have that fifth cup of coffee. Now, Meredith, God bless, is not telling us to give up coffee. Because if she did, I might have to get rid of her as a friend. You said, ain't nothing coming between me and my coffee.
I will never give up coffee.
Okay. Well, also,
that being said, I have it like an hour after I wake up, after breakfast, and it's got a little decaf mixed in, but God damn it, there is coffee.
There is coffee. And we aren't having it at 3 p.m. We're stopping after that hour after breakfast. We cannot do that. Yeah. Let's not fuck with ourselves.
Yeah.
Okay. So you start doing this and what starts to happen to your body?
I start to feel better, right? Like that feeling of waking up, having spent 10 precious hours of my life asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And having, like, I felt like I'd worked really hard on something and nothing to show for it, right? Like I slept for 10 hours, organized my life so I could do that and still felt tired. It's like, what?
Yeah.
I started to wake up and feel refreshed. Like I wake up in the morning and I'm like, I feel like.
It's like you love the coffee, but you don't need the coffee to survive.
I didn't need the coffee and I didn't have that feeling because my sleep was actually doing what it's supposed to do. Like sleep is like a master restorer because when we're sleeping, the technical term is autophagy. But what's really happened, what that means is that when we're sleeping, our cells repair themselves. And if they're too broken to do that, they go down the garbage chute. So when we sleep well, we're filled with cells that are working optimally. And when we disrupt our circadian rhythm, it's like we go to sleep, but it's like turning on the dishwasher and like a tiny trickle of cold water comes out. It's like the dishwasher's running. I'm sleeping, but the dishes in the morning are not looking that good. You take them out and eat off them and put them back in and do the same thing night after night after night.
Something bad can happen. And I will tell you, it did happen to me, you know, and I don't mean to scare everybody, but I, you know, when I, right before I got cancer, I was shooting 12 to 14 hours, maybe 14 to 16 hours a day. And I was waking up sometimes at 4 a.m. in the complete black darkness. And I was going to work. And then we were shooting sometimes till 10 p.m. at night. And And I was sometimes on, well, I was outside a lot, but it didn't matter because I wasn't sleeping. And when I would get home, I would have been in front of these bright lights. I mean, when you're shooting, you're in front of bright lights. In fact, this is the first time that really hit me. I was in front of these bright lights all the time. And so I got so tired that I was like crying every day. And I would sit down in the makeup trailer, and Bibi was almost 2 years old. I would sit down and just cry. And then my makeup artist, Alexis, would have to redo the makeup. And then at lunchtime, I would cry some more. And I was so tired. And I kept saying to my writers, I just don't feel right. I don't feel right. And so then, you know, I find this lump after we wrap, and I go to, oh, because then after that, I'm in an editing room every day, a dark room, a cave.
With a bright screen.
With a bright screen. And I'm there for, you know, 8 hours a day, staring at it, hardly ever going out because I get so tired that I wouldn't even get off the couch. And so then I get diagnosed, okay, and my doctor says to me, can I ask, in the last 2 or 3 months, were you doing something very taxing to your body? Like, were you not sleeping very much, or were you working too much? Because what was odd about my cancer is it was very fast growing. It had been like growing real fast for like the last 3 months or whatever. And had I waited another couple months, I probably would have died. And I looked back at my unhealthy work environment, and I was, again, now filled with shame, which is not helpful, filled with shame, because I had felt like I had done this to myself. Now, listen, I had a genetic gene that was a marker for breast cancer, not the BRCA gene. But my aunt, who has the same gene, she didn't get cancer till she was in her 60s. Why did I get it at 37? You know, that was the big mystery. And why are so many women getting it in their late 30s? Which is why I always say, and this is not a breast cancer podcast, but I will tell you, deep divers, do one gift for me. I want you to go and get a mammogram. I don't care if you're 31. I don't care if you're 27. Pay for it. Just pay for it. Get your genetic testing done. My risk is one. They can tell you if you have a marker, but even if you don't, just go and pay for one. The government will not do it for you. The insurance will not do it for you simply because they don't want to pay for it, not because people aren't getting sick this young. Please, please, please go get checked. I was 37. I wasn't getting mammograms because you don't get them till you're 40. I will tell you, I sat down with all the women, almost all the women in chemo with me were in their 30s. Okay?
Wow.
So at any rate, the entertainment industry has a lot to change, and unfortunately are not changing as fast or at all. But I decided I would never do that to my body again. And now what I'm realizing is light was a huge part of it. You should not be getting up at 4. You should not be eating your lunch at 3 p.m. and you should not be working until 10 in front of bright lights. Tell me about nighttime. What am I doing at nighttime?
So, yeah. And it's, I mean, just to go back what you're saying about the genes for a bit, the way that I've heard it described is like the genes load the gun, the environment pulls the trigger.
It's exactly what my oncologist told me.
Yeah.
Exactly what she told me. And so this is like the number one breast cancer doctor in the world. It is true.
You want to think about optimizing your night, like we talked about, like in when you get up in the morning, and any little thing. Like I started to ask myself, like if I was working on something, I'm like, could I do this outside? And if I can't, it's like, could I do it near an open window? Like open windows are huge. Like it makes all the difference.
Open windows. Crazy.
Open windows. Yeah. So even if you have to be inside, you're on a Zoom call and it's not professional or whatever, open the window. We only get cars with a sunroof, and unless it's raining, I have it open, and that counts.
Wow.
Because the biophotons, they bounce around, they come in everywhere. It's all like that all counts.
And you don't need to be baking in the sun. Like it's okay if I'm under an umbrella, right? But a shade is fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So I sometimes have the sunroof open and a hat on. That's why I never used to wear hats ever. Yeah. And now everyone's like, you're such a hat lady. I'm like, it's because, I'm in the sun so much. But yeah, it's just your eye. You want the frequency hitting your eyeballs and hitting your skin to be the outdoor frequency. So doing that all day long, you're setting yourself up for a great night. Okay, so then sunset is another amazing time to be outside if possible. And I would also say, people ask a lot, like, do I need to be able to see the sun come over the horizon or see the sunset? Yeah. And you don't. You just need to be outside at that time because the frequencies are all there. If you can see it, it's amazing, but it's not necessarily, people live in cities or whatever. It's still just being outside. And then once it starts to get dark, you want the question. So the question to ask during the day is, can I do this outside? Can I do this near an open window? At night, the question to ask is, how close to the outdoor light is my indoor light?
Okay.
So if you have, most houses now have like LED bulbs recessed in the ceilings, those go off.
Okay.
Twilight by twilight. You want those off.
Okay.
And then you want to switch to a lamp with like an incandescent bulb. So those old fashioned, those ones, they're kind of yellowy orange. I think they were outlawed for a while because they use more electricity.
Well, yeah. I mean, and listen, like there are trade-offs. Still get them. There are trade-offs. You could get them on Amazon.
Yes.
Okay.
So yeah. And they've become really popular because I think people are, we intuitively know that you don't want to be under some bright, crazy bright light at night. Like it just doesn't feel good.
Well, also, if I could just stop, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good. No, something I will talk about Parisians is you ain't ever going to see above the lights on the ceiling. Mm-mm. It looks terrible.
Even the crappiest Paris bistro will not have that light up.
Yes, it doesn't look good. We want this bouncing off the face, friends. Yes. We don't want caverns. I hate above lights. And they're in every American home has these tall, tall ceilings. And they're just like, let's all turn the... Who wants that? And the LED light feels bad. So LED lights give me migraines. That's my body screaming like, please don't. Oh yeah, fluorescent lights. There was a writer's room that we were in. This was like our first show where we had no money. And I was like, Lennon, we can't have these overhead fluorescent lights. I'll get a headache. So we brought in like 600 lamps. It looked like a crazy den, but we had to do it.
But you were saving everyone's life.
Thank you. Thank you. We were all also getting depressed because it was very dark in there. So I actually was probably doing the opposite. We should be getting out more. But anyway, okay, so incandescent bulbs, we're going to try to replace all of our light bulbs with these incandescent bulbs.
Yeah. So the ceiling ones, it's kind of a pain to replace.
Yeah.
So I would just say, just turn them off.
Yeah.
And then have lamps in your house.
Okay.
So we have all the lamps in our house of incandescent lights. And then around sunset time, we only turn those on. We don't turn on any bright lights.
Okay.
And then right before you're going to bed, you want only red light. So candles are the ideal, but not always practical. So pure red light bulbs. So we have in the reading lamps beside our bed, we have red light bulbs.
Okay. Okay.
Because even incandescent has a brighter frequency that is not conducive to sleep. So it's better for the early evening, but by the towards later in the evening, really want just a red light bulb.
Like it's kind of sexy. How many hours before you go to bed do you need to like transition to red light?
So probably 2 or 3.
Okay.
And this is where the blue blocking glasses come in handy because a lot of us want to watch a show or watch a movie or be in an, we have a modern life. Our modern lifestyle is killing us, but it is what it is.
Right. This but is if how you don't want to go red light, because I think that it does feel a little extreme to people, even to myself. I'm like, can I do a red light? If I don't do that, the next best thing is to wear the blue blocking glasses, right? Or do I need that red
light? So you probably want the blue blocking glasses anyway. So because who doesn't want to watch TV sometimes?
Right.
Right. Or watch a movie at night.
Right.
And you can't, unless you like order this like orange film and like put it on your TV.
No, gross.
It's like, there's not really a way to I will say, though, same with the phone, though, on the TV, go into your factory settings and reduce the brightness. A lot of them have that option. But this doesn't take the blue light out. You still need to be wearing blue blockers. So blue blockers basically make your eyes think it's looking at a candle.
Okay.
Even if it's not, right? So it, you can stay sort of in a coherent circadian state by using blue blockers at night. And it's also helpful if you're around people who don't get this and are like, you're weird and crazy. I'm turning on all the lights. We're doing this. You can just throw the glasses on. Yeah.
Do the glasses?
The lenses are orange. They're not that pretty.
Okay.
But we need our sleep.
We need our sleep. Yeah. Guess what else isn't pretty? Like dark circles under your eyes, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're also going to link, you have a brand of blue blocker glasses you really like.
Yeah, so there are several like good quality ones. So yeah, I will link them to you
in different price points. Okay,
yeah.
So these are all really, really great things we can do that are not hard. But the number one thing we want to do is get out of your house the moment you get up and put your if you can put your feet on the ground, great. If not, also just be outside. It's a great way to wake up. And then we're going to, as many times as we can, pop outside and it feels good. And so get up out of your chair and just pop outside for a minute or two, feel the sun on your face, you know, feel the wind, then hop back in and keep working. That's something we can do. Then at night, we're going to transition to those bulbs and no overhead light. And then we're going to put those blue blockers on / possibly we're going to invest in a red light bulb. And who knows, we might look sexier in that red light bulb. I don't know. I have to try it out. Or a candle. Who doesn't look good in candlelight?
Candlelight is the best. Because we evolved, right? Like we evolved outside. So we evolved by the fire. And everything else is stuff we invented in the last 30 seconds in terms of evolutionary time.
Right.
So our bodies are not adapted to it. We're just messing everything up.
Now, your website is what?
The website that I would recommend has a directory. It's in beta mode, but there's lots of people in there who understand this. And so if you need like a health coach, personal trainer, there's even some psychologists in there, MDs, we have created a directory. Basically, you're not allowed in the directory unless you understand that light affects health.
Okay.
If you don't understand that, you're not allowed in. And I personally believe that everybody needs one person in their life who knows their individual situation, who understands light and health.
Okay. So if you feel like you want to, first of all, if you're having these chronic fatigue symptoms, if you're not feeling well, if you have other physical ailments and you want to add this into your regimen, this is a place to go. But also just if you want to find out more, I love the idea of a health coach who could really kind of like even probably come into your home or at least on Zoom and see like, where can we make this place healthier and how? And what is the website, Meredith?
It's quantumbiologycollective.org.
Okay. So,
And there's videos on there and links to articles. And
I love this. There was recently like an article in the New York Times Magazine.
I'm not in the article. I just have been trying to tell people about this for so long. And I'm like, finally, the New York Times covered
it. Well, it was funny because, like, for people, when you first start talking about it, you're just like, okay, this is crazy. Light therapy. What is yours talking about? Yeah. Then, of course, the New York Times does it. You're like, it's real for certain people. Yeah. But I'm just saying this because it's legit. It's legit. We'll link the article as well.
It's legit. The science, like, this isn't, and it's a good point, Jessica, like this science is not theoretical. This science is irrefutable. As there's an ophthalmologist who I interviewed called Dr. Jay Montgomery. And he would like ate healthy. He was a like your brother. He was an eye surgeon. He did like, what's that crazy CrossFit?
Sure.
Like 5 times a week. Mm-hmm. And he got so sick that he could barely walk across a room. And not all the best surgeons in the world or in the country, because he knew them all, their best advice was we should probably cut part of your brain out.
Oh my
God. I forget all the technical words because I'm not a technical person. I'm a media person and a coach.
Yeah.
Interviewed people.
Yeah.
Just to clarify. So I don't know the technical words, but they were going to do brain surgery. That was their, that was the medical establishment's best solution for him. And he had a moment kind of like I did. He's like, no.
Right.
And he ended up discovering all of this research. And he now teaches it to all of his patients. But he got better.
That's amazing.
He's fine now.
That's
right. And this was like,
it's not going to cure like, cancer. It's not, when people talk about alternative ways of treating things or getting a better health regimen, I want to be very clear. Like, you've got a problem like cancer, you got to go get chemo. Like, you got to deal with this. But this is all about trying to prevent us getting to that spot. You know, that
yes.
There's so much we can do to not only extend our life or our window of optimal health, which I heard that a physician talking about that. It's like, you don't want to just live a long time. You want to live and enjoy your life and feel healthy.
Yes, exactly. Like, there's no point in getting to 85 or 90 if we start to feel like shit at 40, right? Like, why? And that's the whole, I mean, that's the message of all this is like, we can feel better. And yes, you can, the earlier you catch it, the earlier you start doing these things, it's preventative, and doing these things in conjunction with whatever the doctors have available for you right. for your specific thing, like do this as well.
And, you know, it's interesting when we're in New Hampshire and obviously not everybody has the luxury of sleeping in their parents' basement for 3 weeks, as I did just this time. That was really crazy. But what we were doing was because we communally mother and don't ever want to cook or clean anything. We were eating all of our meals really at the beach.
Yes.
And part of that was I would roll in and I wouldn't have anything to offer, not even a bottle of wine. And somebody would have a piece of meat or fish they would throw my way. And I was a lot like those dogs, you know, the wolves that ended up becoming domesticated that would hang around a campfire and someone would throw them a scrap. But I remember us, there was one beautiful night where all the moms were sitting there and our children would literally stay outside till like 8 or 9 p.m. because it doesn't get dark in New Hampshire till then. And they'd be running around and we were sitting there. So we watched the sunset and then it got completely dark and you were like, and also the husbands like started just cleaning up. Like we didn't make any moves to do anything. And then we were like, be quiet. Like, don't anybody make a move or else maybe they'll stop. And you were like, this is the healthiest night we could possibly have because we were outside for that entire transition. And then we'd bring the children home and they like instantly go to bed. They're never on a screen in New Hampshire, which is just, and they, Bibi would sleep, not just like go to sleep easily, she would stay asleep for like 12 hours. I was like, what is going on? So it's a really, it's a special way to live. And I know I can't live there all the time, but I love the idea of trying to incorporate what we learn there about why we feel so much better physically when we're there, bringing that into our life here. You know, in yeah. when we're working and we have to look at screens and God knows I'm on Zoom every day for like 5 hours looking at Lennon's face, you know. So I love that. Now we have a couple more minutes, Meredith, and I just want to for the Francophiles that are listening to the deep dive. And if you're not a Francophile, you're still going to learn something. When you lived in Paris, I want to hear, and I didn't ask you to prepare for this, what are the top three things you learned from French women that you felt like were something you wanted to incorporate in your life?
Wow. Okay. So there's so many things.
You don't have to limit it to three.
Okay. I'm going to start with one. The one thing though, that I would say not to do that the French do.
Okay.
So I didn't get a chance to mention it. And that's eat dinner late.
Oh.
Your food is also a circadian signal. So,
when should we eat? When should we eat?
You want to eat ideally when it's still light out and
okay.
then shut down that kitchen and don't put another piece of food in your body until the next morning. And then you want to eat breakfast early.
Okay.
So people talk about the fasting window and they eat dinner at 7 and then they don't eat till noon. From a circadian perspective, you would want to eat dinner at 5 and then eat breakfast at 7.
Okay. Okay.
So
good to know.
The European late eating
isn't great.
Is not great.
Okay.
French women don't mind getting older.
Yeah.
Like being 47 in France is perfectly sexy. Like you walk down the street and it's not filled with like dewy, like you see a 23-year-old, a dewy faced 23-year-old, and you're like, oh, that, there's a child.
There's a child. See, and then you're like, there's that's a child. Hot.
And then you see like a 50-year-old walk by because they pull themselves together for all occasions, even the grocery store. And you're like, there's a woman. Oh, she's gorgeous. Right? Like,
You don't stop being sexy.
The covers of the magazines, the posters, the casting in their television shows and movies.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, you watch 10%, right? Like it was a show.
What's
about
that? Yeah. What is that?
The Call My Agent.
Oh, Call My Agent. Oh my God. If you haven't watched Call My Agent,
right? But like, sexy. I'm watching that. I'm like, this is about movie stars and their agents. And because it's made in France, there's like one character under 25.
That's the truth. It's like these celebrated actresses who are working all the time in their 60s. And I'm like, wow. But also everyone on that show, and including the woman that I became obsessed with on Emily in Paris, the boss.
Yes.
She is on Call My Agent. And that's where I first met her. And I was like, holy shit, this woman is so sexy. And in her, I'm not sure, 50s? Early 50s, mid 50s.
For sure, but, 50s.
Okay, so, and they also are dressing to show their bodies, right? Like, the French women, they dress not like provocatively necessarily, but they are embracing their shape, whatever it is. Is that correct?
Yes. I would, it's a tailored approach, I would say, right? Like, it's, there's not a lot of baggy things happening.
Right.
And you're pulled together, but not in a done way. Like everything's very understated.
Right.
Like, I actually had a friend from LA come to visit and we were going out for dinner and she wanted to go somewhere and like really trendy in a really trendy area. So we booked it and she got all dressed and I was like,
oh God, you gotta take some.
You're gonna be overdressed.
Off.
And she was like, really? And I was like, she's like, but we're going to blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I know. I'm like, you'll see. And we got there, right? And it's like all the kids just have like their hair like parted in the middle, kind of naturally dried with like a sweater and some kind of high-waisted thing and like a white tennis shoe.
Right, but they're like, not like really... So when you say pulled together, it's not like they're really like dressing up.
It's like, it's like understated.
Understated.
But it's a look, but it's not like...
You're trying too hard.
It's cool. I don't know how to explain it.
It's just in their blood. It's very strange.
Yeah.
And then the way that they're eating, not of course the lateness of it, but the way that they're eating whole, you know, beautiful organic food is something that is just available. Because anytime we can be going to the farmer's market.
Just so good.
Because France has a country that literally can grow almost everything within, you know, 100 miles. So it's like, so you would go to the farmer's markets and you would buy your, or you would.
Except in France, they're just called markets.
They're just called markets.
I asked about a farmer's market and they're like,
what?
I guess that's where it all comes from, but it's just the marché.
This is also a country that like didn't know what kale was. For a very long time, they did not sell kale because guess what? Kale is not that good. They were like,
gross.
Why do you want to eat this like thing that we give to our sheep? I love that about them. All in moderation.
No, but it's true. I was like on a, always trying to eat grass-fed butter.
Yeah.
And before that, we lived in Hong Kong and I had to buy this specific kind of brand.
Yeah.
That where the cows ate grass. And I got to France and I couldn't find it. And I was like, how am I going to find grass-fed butter? And I was Googling around trying to figure out. And what came to light was that, in fact, all butter in France is grass-fed because that's what cows are supposed to eat.
That shit happened to me in London. I was like, where's your organic food? I need to make sure this is organic vegetables. And the woman was like, honey, I've been to the farm. I see him put the manure on it. Like, I know for a fact, but we don't have such a thing. Or it's like, we do, or it's starting, but not really. Because, like, that's why it all tastes better. All right, Meredith, this is so lovely. I could talk to you forever, and I did. I did get to talk to you forever. We got to sit next to each other for so many hours in the sun this summer, and it was such a treat, and I can't wait to do it again. And I thank you for taking your struggle, never stopping, never not listening to your instinct that there was something wrong and that something could be done, and then making it your life's mission to share it with other people is so special. And it's obviously why you were put on this planet Earth. And I just so appreciate having you in my life.
Thank you, Jessica. I feel the same way. I've said it to you privately. I'm going to say it here. You're a healer disguised as an actress.
Disguised as the most disorganized person you'll ever meet. I appreciate that.
You know, I just want to say on that topic, I started reading a biography of Leonardo da Vinci.
Okay, great. Tell me everything.
Dude was so disorganized. Yes. His dad used to chase him down because he would take commissions and not finish them.
Yes!
He had notebooks filled with all kinds of random things.
Flying machines that never happened.
To the generals saying that he like knew how to build war machines, but really he just was drawing pictures of them.
Oh, I love it. Great. So I'm a Leonardo da Vinci and so are you. And guess what? He ain't eating that zucchini spiralizer. He's eating the real pasta, baby. I love you, Meredith. I'll talk to you soon.
Too, honey.
All right. Love you, deep divers.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's go on the deep dive. Let's go dive in deep. Let's go on the deep dive. No secrets will we keep. It's June and Jessica going deep. How deep can you go? Oh, really deep. Let's go on the deep dive. Let's go dive in deep.
The Deep Dive is produced by Jessica St. Clair, June Diane Raphael, and Earwolf. Our producer is Cody Fisher and sound engineer Jordan Duffy. You can listen to our ad-free and bonus episodes on Stitcher Premium. And for a free one-month trial of Stitcher, use code DEEPDIVE. And remember, the best way to support this show is to rate and review.
And a huge thank you to Anne Geddes for her beautiful photo that she allowed us to use for our cover art. Please head over to AnneGeddesBaby.com and download her new app, which is a safe place you can upload and store all of your precious images of your children and share them with friends and family, plus much more.
We'll see you next time.